Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the all-important Sunbury Motors guarantee, terrific service department. Whether it's routine, difficult, they handle it, and they do it with ease. And not only that, they're looking for more technicians. Looking for a job change? Check in with them. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. It's like old home week. Joe Lenardi in the first half hour. Now my old friend, the outstanding Sweeney Murdy, joins us. Hello, my friend. I hope you and that great family of yours are doing well.
We're doing great, Steve. How are you, sir? Nice to hear your voice.
I'm doing great. Feel great. Got back at 3 in the morning from Iowa. Let's go.
Yeah, you know, I actually sat probably like 5 or 6 seats down from Fran McCaffrey at the 2008 World Series.
Yeah.
He was coaching, I guess, at Canisius, Niagara, one of the Mexicans, I forget which. And his brother is a sport, as you probably know, is a sports writer in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and Jack's been struggling. His brother Jack, who wrote for years for Sports Illustrated and many other publications, one of the great basketball writers out there ever. And so after the game last night, Dick Girardi and I went down and we talked to Fran for maybe 5-10 minutes because we're asking him how Jack is doing, and he gave us a positive report that Jack is making positive strides, which is good. But so we're happy
to
hear that. Yep.
Nice to hear.
All right. So now let's get. I think he was coaching Siena at the time.
I knew it was one of them. Yep.
So now let's get to one of our favorite topics, baseball. And I'm going to start with something that's right there in your own wheelhouse, and that's the Yankees. They made a lot of moves in the offseason. One move, but let's talk about the move they didn't make. You're around it every day. What do you feel were the reasons why they felt Aaron Boone should still be the right guy for this job?
It goes back to something Brian Cashman probably said a few years ago when he talked about the idea that, you know, Joe Girardi was their manager for 10 years and he hopes that Aaron Boone will be their manager for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it had anything to do with them feeling he was not connecting with players or pushing the wrong buttons or anything like that. The Yankees fell by the wayside last year for a number of reasons. I think the thing that connects, and this is probably frustrating to fans because if you, you know, remember the Yankees of any generation, you know how quickly they used to act on different things. But this is a different group altogether. You know, Brian Cashman has been the general manager for over 25 years. He and Hal Steinbrenner have a very good working relationship. The trio of Hal Steinbrenner, Brian Cashman, and Aaron Boone have a good working relationship. They communicate about what goes wrong. There isn't necessarily blame assigned for, hey, you did this wrong, you're fired, I'm going to get somebody else. You know, one of the things that, and I talk to Yankee fans a lot who had this thing like, well, his father did this, his father did that. You know, I asked Hal about this once, and he said that, you know, first of all, a lot of times what my father did didn't work, and he was publicly criticized for it.
Yep.
So I'm imagining there is a wonderful psychoanalytic paper of some kind that can be written on why Hal Steinbrenner turned out the way he did when his father was George Steinbrenner. And everybody, you know, everybody wants him to be like his father, but when they wanted to act that way, that wasn't the popular version of George Steinbrenner. You know, George Steinbrenner's image got rehabilitated because his team won World Series and he stopped firing people.
That's right.
You know, so yeah, that's they're in a kind of a stability right now that I think they enjoy the communication between them, and they're not going to necessarily assign the blame of a win or a loss to one of their failings, even if they are taking into account what areas mm-hmm. they failed in. If that makes sense.
No, it does. Now, there's the acquisition of Juan Soto to this team, especially with right field. Well, you know how patient Soto is. But what do you think of that acquisition as an all-around player?
You know, he's a phenomenal player, and we talk about like what his down years were. Like I mean, if he had 15 more down years like that, he's skating into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I think that the great thing that you hope to accomplish if you're the Yankees is a first inning where, okay, it doesn't have to be a two or three run homer in the first inning. Great if it is. But you're talking about between Soto and Judge, two guys who, you know, routinely go deep into the count.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, wherever you want to put Anthony Rizzo, you want to put Rizzo fourth behind them, he's going to do the same thing. You know, I think if you attack it most nights, if you put out that same lineup most nights, you could find 20 to 25 pitches on the starter in the first inning. And just kind of start that machine rolling. You know, it doesn't have to be a 5-run first. But you can make him throw 26 pitches in the first inning, and, you know, maybe he's gone by the third.
Right.
You know, the Yankees used to have this mentality of trying to get the starter out by the fifth inning. Well,
that's,
you know,
right.
Those times have changed.
Right.
People don't care if you're not. People only want 4 innings out of their starters on some nights, on many nights, depending on who the starter is, because they can go deeper into their pen and match up well. So that philosophy of get into 100 pitches and get them out of the ball game, you know, now, like, you kind of have to pounce a little bit if you want to do that, because, you know, 4 innings and a team is generally going to be prepared to finish out a ball game if their starter only gives them four good innings. But the principle is the same. You just have to kind of step up the timeline a little bit. I think a lineup that has Soto and Judge and Rizzo, if you can get them all up in the first inning, and I know, you know, Judge has talked about batting third, which you probably want, you know, you're going to break up lefties. It's going to be Soto, Judge, Rizzo, I would think. You can do that to a number of guys, and, you know, pitchers better. You know, you have your aces who are going to have a 1-2-3 first or a quick first, but, you know, starters 2-3-4-5 on a given night, you know, they might find themselves nibbling. And if they nibble, well, you know,
yeah,
you're going to find yourself, you know, with first and second and one out and Anthony Rizzo at bat, you know, staring at the short porch. You know, it's a daunting task.
Now, that also means in all likelihood Aaron Judge goes to center field with Soto playing right field. Look, we don't know if Judge is right or not after this toe injury thing and coming back from it. What does that move to center field mean to you in that regard for him? Because, I mean, I think he plays a good center field when he's out there, but what are your thoughts?
I think he plays a good center field, but I don't think your team is at its best if he is your starting center fielder. There's a reason a couple of years ago, I mean, it didn't work out because of, I mean, you know the reasons why, but he had himself a great postseason with Harrison Bader. He actually played very well in that postseason, but the Yankees needed a center fielder. They knew they just couldn't keep running Aaron Judge out there.
Right.
And Judge is fine, but if you're going to try to figure out how to win at the margins, you're going to want a better defensive center fielder than Aaron Judge, if you can get him. And I think that's always the goal. You know, I'm interested to see where Trent Grisham falls into this mix and exactly where he plays and how you move guys around late in the game. You don't want to lose an at bat from a guy, from a Soto or a Judge, if you can help it. But depending on score, are you willing to risk that at bat for a better defensive outfield? I think it'll depend on situations from game to game. But, you know, if you're measuring it out, sure, you can play Aaron Judge in center field if you want, but the cumulative wear and tear of covering that much ground and putting that much stress, more stress, onto your body each day. Mm-hmm. And look, I know there's a lot of people who sit there and say, you're standing around the outfield. You know, that's what you do in your softball league. That's what you do, you know, somewhere else. It's not what you do in the major leagues. I mean, these guys, you know, if you see what these guys look like after they've played nine innings, you'll understand that they put an effort into it.
Yep.
And trying to watch Aaron Judge play center field for 100 and something times, you know, I don't think you're getting the best out of him that way. I don't think you're prolonging his health that way. I don't think that you're really putting your best alignment together that way if you can help it. I know you have to get forced into it, and you can do it, but I don't think it was their first choice, and it's not my first choice. You're just kind mm-hmm. of, you know, you can't reshuffle your deck every time. You kind of have to play right. What's in your hand.
Baltimore is interesting. New ownership is coming in now, despite the veiled threats they were going to stay in Baltimore anyway. But they have a young team and probably aggressive ownership that can re-sign a lot of those guys. What do you think of Baltimore and the young talent they have? Because they're all not going to be of the same, quote, star power, but they won a lot of games last year.
I think that I wish they had taken a bigger swing this winter in free agency. And obviously, listen, they got Corbin Burns from Milwaukee, so that's a big move.
Yes.
That's certainly helped. But I say that because it's really, really hard to sit here and say anymore in sports, hey, this team's young, watch out, their time is coming. You know,
right.
That time comes and goes really quickly.
Yeah, they're tight windows.
Seriously, Steve, 2 years ago, weren't we saying the same thing about the Toronto Blue Jays?
Yep.
And now where are they? You know, the
yep.
Blue Jays are inching closer to losing players to free agency, and it's going to be like, well, what did they do? You know, I think, the danger in looking at teams and saying, wait two more years. Mm. Man, it is so hard to have everything go right
yeah.
1 year, let alone back-to-back years. And everybody thinks that, you know, the climb is not always straight up. You know, you're right, they have a lot of young talent, but it is entirely possible that Baltimore struggles with some underperformance, some injuries, some slumps, yeah. things like that, and all mm-hmm. of a sudden, you know, they go from 101 to 88. And you say, what happened? But then maybe next year they go back to 96, and they're back on the upswing because things worked out. You know, That's why what Texas did last year, you know?
Right. Yep.
They finished it, right? And you can't always count on the, oh, our time is coming, wait till next year. You know, like, you know, the Brewers have been in that mode mm-hmm. for a while. You know, what the Phillies' runs have been the last couple of years, they've been great, but you're looking at, when you're looking at Bryce Harper in his prime, you know, you don't want to wait till next year.
That's exactly right.
The Yankees have Aaron Judge and Gerrit Cole. You know, when they sign them for 9 years and 10 years, you know, you're not envisioning the best of them in years 7, 8, 9. You're envisioning the best of them in years 1, 2, and 3. So go out right. and win now. And I think that's where Baltimore's mindset should be. That's where I hope it is. I'm pretty certain that's where the manager's mind is, because, you know, he knows those kinds of things. But it's going to be up to them to put, you know, to put that urgency on the players. And you know, I don't know if that's going to take maybe some veteran presence during the course of the year, trade deadline, that kind of thing. But just something to push that a little bit and say, listen, it's well and good that you're young and you can see yourself competing for a few years, but you know, also realistically, you're in the AL East. Okay, yeah. The Yankees and Red Sox are not going to be down forever. Right. They're going to start swinging and spending like they know how soon enough. So you better win now, which is why it is, in a lot of ways, disappointing that Tampa Bay was never able to really do that, that Toronto hasn't done that. And if Baltimore misses this window, those windows don't last forever, Steve, especially when you're playing in that same division with Boston and New York.
Yeah, and I talk about windows all the time. It's exponentially tighter than people realize. Last question is going to be about the Dodgers. We know what they did in the offseason. How fascinated are you at what the Dodgers can and can't do as they play through 6 months?
As everybody else is. I mean, this is a show that we are, you know, no pun intended. We want to watch this and see how far they go, because frankly, you know, you've seen them plenty of times win 95 and 100 games. Mm-hmm. It's only ended in the World Series once. That was in the shortened 2020 season in recent times.
Yep.
This team has put a lot into it. And listen, frankly, I always believe that sports are... We all love the idea of everybody having a chance and parity or whatever you want to call it. But sports are at its best when everybody's chasing a kind of common thing. And maybe that goes back, you know, to childhood, your childhood, my childhood. We remember different dynasties. And those are, you know, sports are always great when you're chasing a common enemy, so to speak. And I think the Dodgers being that right now is good for the sport, is good for baseball. A lot of interest in what they're doing. You know, when the Yankees and the Dodgers are good, and you know, the Red Sox and the Cubs and everybody else, you know, sure, some people are going to roll their eyes, but you know, check the TV ratings. You know, people are watching when those teams are in. There's interest when those teams are in. When Sports Illustrated used to be a thing, they were on the cover a lot. That's where the Dodgers are right now, and they have the most they have the best players, the most fascinating players. When you're talking about Ohtani and Betts, and I think you just want to see what they can do on a stage, and if they can complete this, it's fun to watch. They're a good baseball team. Are they gonna win 100 games? Are they gonna win the World Series? I don't know, because you know that's not how the sport works.
Six months,
you know, all the time. But wow. I'm going to enjoy watching it because I'm a fan of the sport and great performances. And, you know, I'm not one of these guys who's going to root from the fall of their face. Man, I'm going to see Betts and Ohtani playing the playoffs to see what they can do. You know, no disrespect to the other teams. If they happen to beat them, great. But, you know, you watch sports because you want to see greatness.
Yeah.
What could be better than seeing the stars, the biggest stars in the sport, in a playoff environment, seeing if they can perform?
Well, but there's another element, too, and I'll just leave it as a last comment. People will tune in for a couple of reasons. One, they are rooting like heck for you. Number two, they're rooting against you and want to see you fall on your face, and they find that enjoyable, too. There's a couple of reasons.
Yeah, it's absolutely. But you know what? That's what drives it. And, you know, I think you find that there's probably some apathy or some segment of baseball fans who maybe didn't necessarily get drawn in by Diamondbacks and Rangers and didn't care to tune in. You can roll your eyes at, you know, Dodgers, Yankees, Dodgers, Red Sox, whatever you want to call it, but you know, people will watch. People will come, Ray. People will most definitely come.
Yeah. Well, you get that mic drop moment. There you go, Sweeney. Hey, always a pleasure. Outstanding. Your work is tremendous. Appreciate you so much. You know that from all the years we've known each other.
Steve, it's great to hear your voice. I hope you had fun at Rec Hall. It looked like a lot of fun the other night. And I'll be listening and watching. And I always appreciate you reaching out. Thanks for your kindness.
You're the best, my friend. Thank you. Sweeney Murdy. Without question, one of the best. It's great to have him on the show today. All right. We will take a break, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, final half hour coming up for today. Fun show coming up again tomorrow. And that will lead eventually into the coaches show. But tomorrow's show will have Tony Knopp on at 1:35, Jody Mack at 2:05, when they get a hold of the King to get him on at 2:35. And then tomorrow night, the coaches show from the field of Tall Trees. Mike Rhodes will be on in the second half hour, the opening half hour tomorrow night from 6:05 to 6:30. Cale Sanderson. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, all with great warranties. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. Terrific service department. Routine, difficult, handle it all. They're the best. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. And they're always looking for new technicians. All right. Yeah, so we talked about last night. Again, you don't know how a game is going to turn out. I mean, so it's 51-49. The final may end up being the same. Right? But it's 51-49, and they call a T on ace. And I'm sorry. What are we doing here? Okay? That's a feel for the game thing. Because he's staring? He was staring at the bench. He wasn't even staring at you. He thought he was staring at him. He didn't say anything. I'm sick of people are like, oh, yeah, he said this. You have no idea. He did not say anything to the official. He didn't say anything to Iowa. I'm sorry, but I think some people watching the game don't have a feel for the game. I get concerned about that sometimes. You're like, oh, geez. Spend half the show correcting things. And that's a feel for the game thing. I'm sorry, but I talk about that all the time. You have to have a feel for the game and just do the game. It's almost like as an official, you're looking to pick a fight with somebody. Just knock it off. Just call the game. I find that stuff to be baffling. Just baffling. And again, it doesn't mean Penn State's going to win. It does not mean at all. The final score could be exactly the same, but I would have liked to have seen it play out from that point on to see what would have happened. But what he did was is it blunted Penn State's momentum. When Iowa was in need of a lifeline, those two free throws followed by the basket gave them that lifeline and got them back on track. And in that regard, it changed what we were watching.
So it's weird that a game-changing technical in Iowa wasn't on Fran McCaffrey.
Fran was fine all night. I mean, he got mad a couple of times. You know, every coach gets mad during the course of the game. Half the time they're mad at their own kids. I was like, what are you doing? Why you're supposed to be over there? Why are you out?
Yeah, I covered a couple Lehigh Bucknell games when it was Fran versus Pat, and that is some volcanic anger versus some volcanic anger.
Well, yeah, I mean that happens. Look, we've seen it happen with Fran over the years. That's fine. Now, look, I mean, do I get along with him? With Fran? Absolutely. I mean, personally, I like talking to Fran. You know, when I don't talk to him during the game. Okay? No. Okay, so everything's all good. Copacetic. But, you know, like I said, Dick talked to him for like 10 minutes after the game last night. You know, mostly about Jack. But Fran was kidding me. He says, geez, Steve. He says, what's it like working with this guy? He says, it's like running through mud. You know, we're having some laughs. But, look, really good coaches, the best, have a great feel for the game. You can kind of get a feeling of watching, like, certain coaches where, you know, it's got to be by the numbers or, you know, they'll call a timeout. I'll give you two guys that call timeouts in bizarre spots, which always baffles me, and I'm like, maybe they know something I don't, or there's a good chance they could. But like, I'll see Juwan Howard or Mike Woodson call timeouts, and I'll look at Dick and say, I'll just give him a look like, why is he doing that? And Dick will give me the look back of like, I have no idea. Like, you're like, okay, well, all right, you know your team better than we do, so go ahead. You know, when you see stuff like that, you're like, okay. But you can always tell the greatest players. Or, you know, we talk about the player that picks up an extra step because they are ingrained in playing the game and know how to play it. Right? The greatest one is an awesome athlete who has those great instincts and feel for the game. That's when you end up with the Michael Jordan and LeBron James of the world. Like, okay, jackpot, got it. This is great. And then you've got guys that you look at, you know, Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders, not only was a great athlete, he had a great feel for the game. He saw things. He's great. Okay? You've got guys like that that just, like, are great athletes and know how to play. And then you got a bunch of guys out there that are great athletes and really don't know how to play. Now, they get away with certain things because of their athleticism, but you can't do that for an entire game, which means you absolutely can't do it for an entire season. And that is... And you see, you watch a Connor McDavid play or an Austin Matthews or a McKinnon. Their feel for how to, Cale Makar, their feel for how to play the game, knowing where the chess pieces are. We always talked about that with Manning and Brady and, you know, and so forth. You can see that in Mahomes. Right? The guys that know how to play. Right? And you don't have to be a superstar, You watch a Max Crosby play for the Raiders, right? Pass rusher extraordinaire. T.J. Watt, wow. They know how to play. And then there's a bunch of guys, you look out there and go, well, thank goodness they're a great athlete, because when it comes to really knowing the intricacies of, you know, and reading something and doing something, you're like, right? Baseball's a good one. We just talked with Sweeney Murdy about that. What holds the Yankees back? What's held the Yankees back has been somewhat pitching, but their defense has not been very good, and they are not a good team at running the bases. I mean, they make a lot of base-running mistakes, fundamental stuff that they should know better. In over 162 games, it's going to cost you something somewhere. So that goes to, we talked about coaches, we talked about players, but this goes for officials too. You can tell who has a feel for the game. Now, are they going to make every call perfectly? No, of course not. No official does. No coach makes the right call every time. Coaches will always tell me, I wish I had a couple back. All right. No player's going to make the right play. You know, you could have impeccable instincts and still make mistakes. Okay? So guess what? I mean, that happens along the way. Right? Broadcasters make mistakes. Officials make mistakes. The best officials make mistakes. Because, I mean, it's hard. It's a difficult job. But you can tell as time goes who has a feel for it and who doesn't. That moment with Ace last night was I don't have a feel for the moment play. A call. I don't have a feel for the moment. Okay.
And I do this too, but I'm sure you can, you know, before the game starts and you look across and see who the three officials are, you probably pretty well know what kind of officiating game you're going to get.
Every time.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's guys you want to see and there's people you don't want to see.
Yeah. So
I was going to say, and to go back to, you know, you don't want perfection, you want consistency.
Right. I mean, look, again, will they make mistakes? Yes. Do I want to take the human element out of it? No. No, no, no. Okay? And, look, I can accept mistakes as mistakes. What I can't accept is a mistake because of your lack of feel for the game or you letting your own emotions get in the way of the game. You can't do that. That's not your job. It's not your job. Again, it could have absolutely ended 90-81 Iowa if that call doesn't happen. Could end up the exact same result. I just would have liked to have found out what it could have been last night because there was no need at all to make that call. And anybody out there, Ace did not. Okay. Okay. About time some Penn State fans start sticking up for their own players. I mean, because I've had some people comment, well, hey, look, don't talk about stuff you don't know anything about. Okay. Well, he shouldn't have. Oh, knock it off. He didn't do anything. It's like, yeah. Ah. That, I mean, again, yeah, that's okay. Wrong call, wrong time, wrong reason. That's 0-3. And again, the final still could have been 90-81 Iowa. Please don't in any way, shape, or form saying that's the reason they lost. No, they fell down by 17 points in the first half. They force themselves to play uphill, 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 which is a physical and mental grind to do. But they finally get themselves in the neighborhood of the promised land, and this happens, where now suddenly you could have changed maybe the emotional dynamic of the game, where suddenly you might be the team playing in front, and they're playing uphill. And that call allowed the team that was really starting to be unsteady, and they were, all right, to steady themselves and breathe again. And I've talked a lot about it today, but it's a problem. Okay? It is a problem. You know how many times last night I watched Brooks Wells and DJ Carstensen come over and talk to coaches last night? Just come over and just talk to them. Hear them out. Gave them an explanation of what they saw or didn't see. Okay? Well, that's part of good officiating, right? Ignoring people and going, look, that's my call. That's it. We're done. Right. Well, great. Hey, thanks for being here tonight. So, yeah. Again, that's a feel for the game situation. If you don't have a good feel for it or you let your emotions cloud your feel for the game, that's a problem. That's a problem. And I have to openly ask the question if that came into play last night. That, I don't know. I'm not saying no. I'm not saying bias. I am not in any way, shape, or form saying that. 0-0-0. No way. I'm saying did the official let his personal emotion get in the way of the feel for the game of like, hey, just let it play. This, you know. Yeah. And it's not as if Ace doesn't push the envelope. He does. But not he didn't in that case. He did not in that case. Again, could have still ended up 90-81 and it wouldn't have mattered. Or who knows? You don't know. We'll never find out. On to Minnesota. Minnesota plays at Illinois tonight. The Athletic, I know you appreciate great writing. Tim Layden, who's one of the best writers, wrote a great story on the approach of history and Pete Maravich. And, you know, he threw in a great one. He threw in one about Michaela Schifrin. Oh, the suit just perked up. Ooh, Olympics. Going past Ingemar Stenmark's record for World Cup victories when she won her 87th. She now is 95. And Stenmark, by the way, was generous in his praise about her breaking the record. Now, we don't have that this time with Pete Maravich because, unfortunately, Pete Maravich passed away. Unfortunately, decades ago. Ooh, so young. But again, you know what she's doing? She's bringing back names that people learn more about. Right? I saw Pete Maravich play a few times on TV. I mean, there weren't as many games on TV back then, but I saw him a few times on TV. Holy mackerel. What a showman. What a player. Right? Lynette Woodard, it's brought her name back into the limelight. Always remember, and I talked to my class about this today, Todd. The foundation of what we see today and praise today does today and the greatness of what we see today does not happen if the people who laid the foundation failed. What happens if George Mike and Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain fail and the league folds? Right? What happens?
We're not watching NBA.
Right? I mean, the NFL was going along in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and it's just going along. They aren't selling out. They kind of have a TV contract. What if they fail? We don't have 123 million watching the Super Bowl. It's kind of hard to conceive of that, but there are people who help lay foundations as players that should allow us to appreciate the greatness that we have today. And that's why it's great to look back on their careers and when somebody's approaching a record to then go back and appreciate. And I'll give you a great example. When Jerry Rice was breaking all of the receiving records, you know what it allowed everybody to do? To look back and read up on the incredible career of Don Hutson and all the records he set with Green Bay as a receiver. It gives you a total appreciation of what it was like back then and how it is now. And that's what this is doing. That's what makes it, to me, personally fun. All right. Oh, go ahead. Sorry,
Tom. I was going to say, anytime you can watch Pistol Pete highlights, take a chance.
Oh, it's a show unto itself.
It is. It looks very modern. Well, the film doesn't. He does.
No. The film is very grainy. But the SEC did a great documentary on him. That I strongly recommend because, I mean, look, there are times where he was unfortunately a tortured soul trying to go through this. All right. We'll wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right. Wrapping it up for today. Tomorrow will be another fun day on the show. As Tomorrow, Tony Knopp and Joni Mack, and I'll text the King, get the King on. That'll be a lot of fun tomorrow. Get them on the show, and we'll talk about the Eagles in free agency. We'll do that to depress Matt Catrillo. And then Tony Knopp on the business of sports, that will take the suit and put him into the tank. He hates the business of sports. Unless he's the one selling it.
I was just going to ask, are ads the business of sports?
They are, but that's to him, it's just that's part of the job.
Ah.
Right. And I've said this before, all kidding aside, he's not crazy about it. Right? When we talk about the business side of sports, because he believes, as many do, in the lure of sports, the game, the fun, the excitement, the build-up, the open set to music and things like that. And a lot of people feel that way, and I understand that. That's one of the reasons why, to me, sports has succeeded, that kind of attitude. The suit says his sales ruined the magic. Oh, wait a minute. Actually, he wanted to type to me, quote, "It ruins the magic." You know what he actually ended up typing? You'll love this. "I ruin the magic." He didn't put the T in there.
That's Freudian.
"I ruin the magic." Wow, very impressive. "The first step to recovery is acknowledging it." What's the problem?